A New Day for Al-Islam in America Radio is proud to present its weekly series called Meet the Members of the Muslim American Media Alliance. And this alliance is made up of Muslim professionals, organizations, and businesses in the media industry with a collective mission to share information, network, and present the stories of Al-Islam and Muslims in America through resources in print, music, film, radio, video, and new media. And now, your host for the program, William Kareem. With God's assistance, we begin. Assalamu alaikum, and welcome to another edition of Meet the Members of the Muslim American Media Alliance. Yes, the Muslim American Media Alliance is composed of magazines, newspapers, websites, blogs, radio, television, and social email networks. And as you know, we are living in a time when the news and media and images of Muslims is no longer just black and white, but it is colored with particular opinion of pundits, politicians, news organizations, movies and television shows, and many times Al-Islam and Muslim Americans have been ostracized and misrepresented without having an opportunity to respond or be consented. The Muslim American Media Alliance has come together to cover the news, opinion, and events of the day and to share our unique point of view with America and the rest of the world. Some of our members are Muslim Journal, A New Day for Al-Islam in America Radio, American Muslim 360, Taqwa Productions, Umar Stream World TV, Station Imam W.D. Muhammad, You Are a Creator, Social Networking Site, the Islam TV Network, Aliyah TV Network, Bilalian Speaks, YouTube Videos, Famico Publications, Aziza Magazine, Speak TV, and the Northeast Muslim Email Network. And today, we're in the middle of Women's History Month. We have a special guest with us, one of our members, Aziza Magazine's editor-in-chief, Sister Taiba Taylor. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Taiba. How are you today?
Wa alaikum salam, Brother William. I'm fabulous, wonderful, alhamdulillah. Thank you so much for having me on.
And thank you so much for accepting our invitation. Before we get into the program, ladies and gentlemen, it is only fitting that I give you a brief presentation of Editor Taiba Taylor's bio. Taiba Taylor is the founding editor-in-chief and publisher of Aziza Magazine, the winner of two Folio Eddy Awards and a New America Media Award. Ms. Taylor has been named as one of the 500 most influential Muslims in the world by the Middle Eastern think tank, the Royal Islamic Strategic Study. Through Aziza, Ms. Taylor has realized her vision to provide a vehicle for the voice of Muslim American women, a vehicle that portrays their perspectives and experiences and shatters commonly held stereotypes. Ms. Taylor blends her passion for spirituality, women's issues, and communication to further the causes of Muslim women. She has appeared on CNN and other news media to comment on current affairs, and she has visited 37 countries spanning 6 continents. She has presented lectures on Islam and Muslim women at national and international conferences, including the Harvard Divinity School's Islam in America Conference, the International Islamic University of Malaysia's Islam and Muslims in the 21st Century Conference, the Belgian-U.S. Muslim Dialogue, the lecture series at the Women's College of Sharia and Law of the International Islamic University of Islamabad, Pakistan, and the Fulbright Symposium in Perth, Australia. Ms. Taylor has worked on several interfaith initiatives and traveled to Turkey, Spain, Morocco, Jerusalem, Greece, and Jordan with various groups of Jews, Christians, and Muslims. In spring 2010, she was one of 8 Muslims to meet His Holiness the Dalai Lama in an Islam-Buddhism common ground event. And she was invited to the White House iftar in August 2011. Last year, she traveled to Tajikistan and Afghanistan to speak about women's empowerment and entrepreneurship. That is one heck of a bio, Sister Taiba. But what continent haven't you visited yet?
The Antarctic.
Antarctic. It might be a little cold. But the question becomes, are there Muslims on Antarctic that you know of?
Not that I know of. The only people living down there are scientists, and they're doing, experiments. So there might be a Muslim living there doing an experiment. I'm not certain, but not right now. I'm not certain. But, there are people who go for tours, so.
Yeah, so maybe they'll have you down there in the cold to talk to the scientists. Now, sister, you've been very, very busy. Very busy, and I see that it says that you were born in Trinidad, born on the island of Trinidad in the Caribbean, and grew up in Toronto. Studied biology and philosophy in Toronto. You've lived in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, for several years and attended classes at King Abdulaziz University. But it also says that you have five children and a grandmother of five. My God, how did you find the time? Tell us a little bit about time, sister, and how you've come to utilize it.
Well, there's a hadith about from Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, that says, take care of five before five. Take care of your health before you become sick. Take care of your wealth before you become poor. Take care of your time before you become occupied. Not just take care of value and be appreciative of this, and take care of your life before your death. And it's really important. The way that we use it is important. So when people say they don't have time for it, that just means that it's not a value, because whatever you value in your life, that's what you'd spend your time and your money on.
One of the questions that I had talking about time, let's go back in time a little bit. And before you actually got on the path, or you found the path of Aziza Magazine, what were you doing just before you decided to get on the path to Aziza Magazine?
I was the administrator of the Islamic School of Seattle. And it's a school that was in existence for, I think, 35 years. It just closed last year. And that was my job. I was coordinating the administration for the school.
Just before you got on that path, I'm asking you, what was the epiphany that put you on the path to Aziza Magazine?
Well, I think two things, but the first, the immediate or the coalescing kind of factor, I think, was I traveled from Seattle with a group of my friends to a conference of Muslim women. And it was Muslim women from all over the country, from all different ethnic backgrounds, from all different schools of thought. And it was a very powerful gathering. Muslim women from all different professional disciplines. And when I stepped inside the conference room, I was really struck by the power and the presence in the room. And even though I'm Muslim and I know that, we're powerful, the discrepancy between the reality of who Muslim women are and how Muslim women are portrayed really struck me. And I said I wanted to encapsulate all that is in that room and put it on the pages of a magazine so that everyone can experience what I was experiencing at that time. So on the way back on the airplane, the two sisters who I had traveled with, I kept telling them, we have to have a magazine. We have to, share the stories of Muslim women. And And they just kind of said, okay, Taib, why don't you just be quiet and go ahead and do it? So I took up the challenge and said, I will. So that was the immediate epiphany. It was that conference.
And was that, and it says here that the publication that was that in the 2000?
That was in 1992.
Okay.
In Chicago. So there was a long time between the idea and the reality of manifesting, you know, bringing it the magazine into reality. There was some time between that.
So the baby steps from 92 to the, you know, how did the vision kind of progress along from 92 to 2000?
Well, in 92, I got the idea, and I brought together a friend of mine, and I said, would you be interested in doing this with me? And I put together a format, what the magazine would look like, and I actually wrote up a business plan. And in the process of gathering information for the business plan, I contacted several printers and several publishers. And one of the publishers I contacted was a Muslim publisher, and he invited me at that time to create a children's magazine for Muslim children, and I did that. And then I think it was after maybe three issues of the children's magazine, he invited me to do the women's magazine. And so I started doing a women's magazine. It wasn't exactly the idea that I had in my head, but we started doing a women's magazine, and then after a few issues, he said, well, it's not really profitable, so I think, you know, he said he would just close it down. So the idea that I had in my mind still was percolating, because the magazine that I did with the publisher wasn't really the one that I had envisioned. There was, you know, it wasn't the same thing. And so by that time, I moved from Seattle to Atlanta, and decided I would create the magazine I really had. So that's how Aziza came into fruition.
So the name, I'm going to ask you another epiphany question, and that is, how many names did you go through before you settled on Aziza?
We didn't go through any. Aziza was it.
You serious?
Yeah.
From the very beginning.
Yeah.
Okay,
we did go through several for the company name. The company name is WOW Publishing Incorporated. But the magazine name, it was just one. At the time that we were incorporating the company, there was a trend in the magazine industry to name women's magazines after women's names. At that time, there was a magazine called Victoria, Mirabella, Jane, Marie Claire. So lots of different women's magazines were being named for women. So I knew I wanted to do that. It would be a Muslim woman's name. And so looking for what we wanted to portray, we wanted to portray the Muslim woman as being strong and dear. And that's the classical meaning of the word Aziza, from Azza, meaning dearness and strength. And so we defined the Muslim woman as the one who is dear to herself and others, with noble strength and dignity. And the other reason that we chose Aziza is because it is a Muslim woman's name that you will find in every Muslim community in the world. Some names are only specific to certain countries or certain regions, but everyone knows an Aziza. So we wanted to speak to the universality of the Muslim woman's experience, as well as to her strength and dearness.
I was very impressed. I've known of Aziza for a long time, and I remember having gotten the subscriptions for some time. But I didn't know that Aziza magazine was so affordable, number one. It was very affordable. But when I got it, it's just a magazine that I believe there should be on in every Muslim household if there's a woman in it. If there's a woman in that household, this magazine should be here, because just by having the magazine and seeing the beautiful images, and, you know, today we're living in a time of the image and the visual image, and there is just so many beautiful It is, first of all, it's a well-done magazine, and the images that are inside are just so beautiful. How did you get to such a level of quality with this magazine? I mean, did this happen over a period of time, or how did that happen?
No, we immediately, when we decided to put the magazine together, we did several focus groups, but we knew that I knew very strongly that I, you know, very, very adamantly that it had to be a product of quality. It wasn't going to be on newsprint. It wasn't going to be, you know, stapled together. It wasn't going to be something shoddy. It was going to speak to excellence. Excellence in our community, excellence in ourselves, excellence in our way of life. And it had to be a reflection of that. And it had to be a magazine that, putting it on your coffee table or on a newsstand, people would be able to take pride, not arrogance, but pride in it. So we knew from the beginning that it had to be high quality. The challenge with that was the expense. So in doing my business plan and my research for the business plan, I found out it would take three times as many dollars to print the magazine inside America than it did to print it in Indonesia. So the co-founder of the magazine is my business partner, Marlina Surakasuma. She's from Indonesia. And so we put together a team on the ground in Indonesia who oversaw the printing process. And for 8 years, the first 8 years of the business, we printed in Indonesia until the technology changed, and now it's affordable for us to print. So we now print in Seattle, Washington.
Excellent. I'm going to also mention, it seems like your hard work has paid off. What can you tell us? Because on the front of the cover, right up in the left-hand corner, there is a seal that says 2012 Folio Eddie Award winner. What can you tell us about this as a win, and how significant is it?
Well, the Folio Award is an industry award. So this is the magazine industry award, and it's handed out in different categories. They might have like sporting magazines, women's magazines, religious magazines, news magazines, you know, lots of different categories. So it's a prestigious award. I mean, this is an award that's given out yearly and annually, and it's given for quality. So it's good to have an industry award because it really speaks to your excellence.
Yes.
This is our second Folio Award, and we are very, you know, we were just thrilled to be part of it.
So who is some of your competition in this field? If we were supposed to talk about Essence Magazine, if we were supposed to talk about some of the other magazines, the women's magazine Vogue and all the rest of those, is that your competition?
Well, it depends on which category. There's two main categories. One is the editorial awards, and one is the artistic awards, what they call the Aussies. So the Eddie Award is for the editorial, and the Aussies are for the art design of the magazine. So people like different magazines, you have different categories. Like if you're a consumer magazine with frequency of 6 times a year or more, you're in one category. If you're, you know, like a monthly magazine, you're in a different category. So we are a quarterly magazine.
Right.
Right.
So then your award is basically for content.
Yes, ours was for content. We didn't submit ours to be considered for design. We submitted for content, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's
so the first time we won a folio, you get a bronze, gold, or silver. I mean, gold, silver, or bronze. And the first time we submitted it, I think the first one we won was in 2009. And we got the bronze. And so last year we got the silver. So, Allahu Alam, maybe this year we'll get the gold.
We're going to work on it, that's for sure.
Inshallah.
That brings us up to the content of the magazine, and I see that you have a content page that lists various categories like upfront, contributors, conversation, dean, shahada, real gems, book club, poetry, global voices, et cetera, et cetera. Do these categories always come in the magazine?
Yeah, departments always are, those are the constants of the magazine, yes. You always find those. The features are the things that change, and the special report is the thing that changes. But the rest of the magazine remains constant, so those are the headers. And, you know, we have different topics underneath each of those headers.
Yes. Now, upfront is always where the editor actually makes a presentation?
Yes, I always write that one. Uh-huh.
Now, I would like to read from this month, or this volume, which is Volume 7, Issue 2. And it says, how do you define the all-American Muslim woman? For mm-hmm. some, she is an immigrant with roots in a far-away, exotic Muslim-majority country. For others, her heritage is here, near the fields of Iowa, on the shores of the Mississippi Gulf, or the forests of Oregon. Some define her as a woman in a tightly wrapped hijab. For others, she's a woman whose hair is flowing freely. A number of people defined her as a working professional, and some are certain she is a stay-at-home mom, homeschooling her children. Sister Aziza, how do you define the all-American Muslim woman, and how did this come about?
She is all of those and more. Well, it came about when last year that they came out with a reality show called All-American Muslim. So when we heard about that, I was very puzzled. I said, well, how on earth are they going to define the All-American Muslim? Because our community is so rich with diversity. We have, you know, in Muslims who've been here for generations. We have Muslims from who just came last month. And we have Muslims of every different school of thought. We have Muslims who relate to Islam from a cultural level, some from an intellectual level, those of us who relate on a spiritual and religious level. So this community is probably the most diverse religious community in the world. So defining them all-American Muslim would take a bit of a, you know, it would be quite difficult, I think, for
yeah.
for people to try and encapsulate it into one TV show. Actually, I thought that they would probably take several different families, and they did, but they were all Arabs from
yes.
Dearborn. So,
ladies and gentlemen and listeners, the way that Aziza Magazine has it laid out on the pages at the All-American Muslima, a multitude of identities, and then right on the top it has Shahida, country music listener and a hillbilly at heart, community activist, and then it gives another name, community activist, public speaker, professor, reformer, and then another name as a corporate executive and student politician, Maria Ibrahimji, journalist, Rena Hafiz. I'm sorry if you're sending these names wrong, but it's just the way that it's laid out. Professor, reformer, entrepreneur, community activist, public speaker. This is just very well done, very well done. And then it goes into, as you turn the pages, you have the professor, Dr. Aziza, the innovator, Najma Jalaluddin, corporate executive, the student politician, the entrepreneur. Very nicely laid out in the magazine as far as that special report is concerned. Now, for the contributors, how do you get people to contribute to the magazine?
Well, all of the articles are written by Muslim women. We thought it would be important to have one publication where her voice was unfiltered. So many times Muslim women are spoken about either by Muslim men or by people who are not Muslim. And this is, Aziza is an opportunity for her to not only set her own agenda, but also to celebrate her accomplishments and discuss her issues. And so we do have a core of writers that we've worked with, you know, for the last 13 years, but also we have freelancers who have heard about us, and we require that they submit a query. A query is an outline of an article that you want to write, and you define your sources as well as the slant of the article, the editorial tone of the article, and then it submits. It's submitted to the magazine, and then we discuss it at the editorial meetings.
Now, with that, and just I think we want to put a plug in. If someone wanted to contribute a story, a Muslim sister would like to contribute a Muslim story, where would they actually send that?
Okay, they would send the query to articles@azizamagazine.com.
Okay, that's pretty simple. articles@azizamagazine.com.
Right.
Okay, very good. Now, there's also a space that's called Conversations, which is letters from the readers. Is that correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So these are readers who actually communicate and send in letters to Aziza Magazine.
Yes, and we encourage all of our readers to, send in their comments to, tell us what they think about the magazine or a particular article, and we print it.
What was also so impressive about this magazine that I subscribe to is the photo contest.
Oh, okay, yes, we had a photo contest last year.
Uh-huh. Yes, that's real nice. Tell us about that photo contest, how you actually came up with it, some of the winners of it. How did that go?
Well, we had a photo contest. Let me back up because we are running a campaign on the back of the magazine called The Aziza Woman, and we have three adjectives, and we started with A and gone through the alphabet now. I think we're up to N.
Yes.
And we're also posting the back covers on the Aziza Facebook page for the month of March, for the Women's History Month as well. But it talks about the Aziza woman and her strength and her accomplishments. So we wanted to invite really all the women, both on the front cover and the back cover, are women who are doing something in the community. They're not just paid models. They're actually people who are contributing. And on the front cover, there's a story about that woman inside the magazine. Not so for the back cover, but again, the person on the back cover is also doing something. So we wanted to open that back cover up to, usually it's by invitation, but we wanted to open it up to other people as well. And so we had a photo contest of a woman reading a magazine and send in your best shot. And we got some fabulous shots and
fabulous,
some really good
yes.
ones. And it was mostly on the Facebook page, but also on the Aziza page, website page. And the winner is on the back cover of Volume 7, Issue 2.
Yes, there's some fabulous photos, very, very nicely done. And now there's also a subject in the content page called Dean. What is Dean? Because this month it's about gratitude, and it's written by Zainab Ansari Abdul Razak with an art illustration. What is Dean? What is that geared towards?
Dean is religion. And to be able to write for this section, you have to have either a degree, a university degree, or an Islamic school ijazah certificate to be able to write for this department. So you have to be qualified in Islamic studies.
To know your
studies.
Religion.
Yes,
right.
In
to
Islamic studies.
Yes.
Right. So it's this department is all some article about religion. So we've done articles on. Like we had a story on some of the on Eve. We've had a story on angels. We've had an article on jinn. We've had articles on inheritance, Muslim women's inheritance, anything from the Quran, from the religion, from we had something about patience. So we've gone through several different topics, and 99 Names of Allah was another topic. But they're all written by Muslim women who have studied the religion.
Excellent. And how does this subject, Dean, that this content that appears in Dean, how does that differ from the next one, which is Shahada?
Shahada is a story of one person's journey, one woman's journey to embracing Islam, whether she was born in a Muslim family or she found Islam later on in life. It's that story of the events and her her decision to worship God and to become submitted to God as a Muslim. So that's the Shahada story is about that particular process, a spiritual process that the person went through to become, you know, to believe La ilaha illallah Muhammadur Rasulullah for themselves. Because even if someone is born inside of a Muslim country, a Muslim family, they still have to go through a certain introspection and a certain evaluation of the universe before they come to their own embracing and understanding and belief.
Yeah, this one, this month, is about a continuous journey by Asma Hashimi. She said, I knew about the basics of Islam, but I needed a perspective outside of the South Asian community and more facts about the faith. I wanted to make sure I knew what Islam was from a neutral perspective instead of from a cultural one. Very interesting article.
Yes.
There is a page in the magazine and that looks like you're running another contest, an essay contest by New America Media.
Yes, that one
actually,
that's right. A New America Media is a media organization that deals with ethnic media, so it kind of coordinates a lot of ethnic media. So you might have like Korean news or the Latino newspapers or TV and magazines. And we partnered with them to open it up to several different ethnic medias in Atlanta. And many of them are local, so the contest was only for people living in Atlanta, and it was really about education. They got some money from the Bill Gates Foundation for this, and so the winner is going to win $500, and $500 for the teacher they wrote about. This was to write about the teacher who changed my life. And this is really to acknowledge the power of teachers. So oftentimes in our society, we acknowledge, we give a lot of value on celebrities or sports or musicians, but we don't give the same value to people who are really shaping our minds and our children's minds, and which is the teachers. And so this is one way we're doing that. So, alhamdulillah, we got several, quite a few entries, and then we're down now to the final judging.
You know, now let's talk about, in the table of contents, one of the subjects that I really found to be a real gem, and that is the real gem section. Boy, I'll tell you, Sister Taiba. These iPhone covers are so beautiful.
Yes, they are. They are.
Oh, they are so beautiful. Even new. Who knew? Who knew they existed? But Tech7 has a large selection of decorative iPhone covers, ranging from cases that express your religious belief to those that announce your patriotic affiliation. And they are beautiful. They are very beautiful. Also,
yes, they are very beautiful.
My wife is a paper towel user. And when she saw this no paper paper towel, which is if you are feeling guilty about the number of paper towels you use weekly, and my wife probably does, and it says Bambooey is the product for you, made from bamboo. A roll of these reusable towels can take a place of 60 rolls of paper towels. And I want you to know, sister, when I saw this real gem section and I started looking at some of these, and my wife, she looked at the magazine also, and she was impressed. But she was really, she's the one who actually told me about the iPhone covers and the paper towels, who got me to basically look at this section. But they are the real gems.
Yes, well, in this section, we like to feature products that we think are great. Some are created by Muslims and some are, you know, different corporations. So we find them at, you know, conventions, or sometimes people send us samples and ask us to put it in the magazine. And, you know, we just have, or somebody will see it and say, wow, this is really great. And we definitely want to share those with other people.
You do have a book club. How do you find the books, and do authors present them, or do you go out and find them, and can authors send books to you?
Yes, we get lots and lots of books from
really?
Publishers and from authors. Yeah, people send us books constantly. Every week we have books coming into to the Aziza office. People really want us to, you know, review their books. And our topics, really, what we try to do is narrow it down to books that either are by Muslim women, about Muslim women, or have some value for Muslim women. And so that's our criteria, but still people send us so many different things and we have to narrow it down. So we really, you know, we choose the books. So the next magazine are going to be some two poetry books by Muslim women.
Another piece in the content section is poetry. And you have this every magazine?
Every magazine, there are poems, yes. And this is probably the most competitive department. Everybody sends us their poems. Some are great, some are not so great. I guess people think that it's easy to write a poem. It's not that easy. But this is the department that we get the most submissions in.
I would like to read a couple of the poems and just to let people see. Let the listeners see what we're talking about. This is Emancipation by Aisha Bahouri. Mm-hmm. I hope I'm saying her name right. But she says, she covers her body in a society where the implicit creed is reveal yourself, where legislatures have banned the veil, deeming it a repressive cloth, where women are subjugated to fashion standards that reduce them to a pair of legs, a pretty face, a head of black curls, and they say she is oppressed. That is Emancipation by Aisha Bori. And the other one, this poem really struck me.
Mm-hmm.
This is the one called Hear Me Out. It takes up two pages of your magazine. And it's a caution sign. The visual image is a caution sign that has been cracked in half. Brothers and sisters, you need to see this, but please listen as you will hear this. It says, and I have a couple of questions for you afterwards.
Okay.
I speak from a place of obstinacy, where frustration is elevated by paper planes that reach the imam, not yet the man, who is deaf to the reverberations of my true voice resounding, and remains heedless to my profound spirituality, lamentably. And I shout, as my silence transcends pounding its heavy fists on the masjid walls, for here I am, my Lord, a woman who bleeds and pleads against the tyranny of those that mean to erect a barrier between you, O divine, and I. For what do they know of my God consciousness? If they can't hear the beating of my heart in prayer, nor see the tears of my soul in pensiveness, submitting to your might. And I holler from a place of anguish as they put words in my mouth and recount my experience, pretending to comprehend it and the depth of reverence in the womb that bore them. For what do they know about creation or childbirth or menstruation? And I push back as they impose their fragmented ritualistic views on my innate and sacred worship, exerting their power to drive me out of your realm as this prayer space belongs to them exclusively, unquestionably, even as they forget having desecrated it. No, Allah, I object to the unequivocal oppression of what they've come to understand as modesty. And I call hypocrisy, for why not give me a smile and the salams, but entertain a sugar-coated dawa conversation in the street corner? No, it is not piety, but the double-edged sword of double standards by which they preach and teach that I must relegate my vocal cords to appease their insecurities. And so I pray, O Allah, that you lend my voice projection, making it a way for inspiration, proclaiming your message as the long-forgotten notion of equality is reclaimed in your name and by your grace. That is a beautiful poem.
It is. It is. It's really a very, very powerful poem.
And so my question, when I read it, sister, it was revealing, because I understood that sister's voice is not being heard.
Yeah, certainly it's not being heard, but it's more than that. It's almost as if our presence in the masjid, in some masajid, is deemed sacrilegious, or as if we are somehow contaminating the sacred space, and that we need to be relegated behind curtains, and our voices are, you know, seen as, you know, something that is not to be heard. And so the sister is saying that you don't know what is in my heart, you don't know my level of God consciousness, and also that you are denying me this right to worship as you know, in this space. And it's very powerful, I think, the way she is very subtly saying, you know, I'm going to speak from this place, you know, where I like that part where she talks about the double-edged sword of double standards. So people don't even want to give a Muslim woman salams because they see that as being more pious, but at the same time they're going to go out on the street corner and you know, talk to non-Muslim women, and they don't see any incongruence in that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just really talking about the power of the woman, and how that we are not to be denied this space of power.
Aziza Magazine is the place for this poem. It is
yes,
definitely,
it is a very Aziza poem.
It is. That is true. I would like to segue into a conference that you did at Columbia University. You've done over, made of papers, as far as papers and presentations, you've done over 150 in your span as this busy woman that you are. But one of the conferences that you did was Breaking the Silence, Muslim Women Speak Out. And this was the National Expo of Ethnic Media at Columbia University in New York in 2005. Can you tell us about that?
Well, that was the NAM conference. So there were all ethnic media, you know, Chinese newspapers, Korean newspapers, anything that focused on one particular cultural or ethnic group. And so I spoke about Muslim women because most people get their information about Muslim women through the lens of the mainstream media. And mainstream media often reports on Muslim women through the lens of Middle Eastern politics. So quite often when they portray a Muslim woman, it's usually an Arab woman, and it's usually an Arab woman who is a victim of war or men or religion. Very seldom is it the Muslim woman who is to be emulated, who is to be admired. And so I spoke about the discrepancy again between the reality of who Muslim women are and the portrayals of Muslim women, and why Aziza Magazine is filling that, and how Aziza Magazine is filling that void.
You have done a number of presentations, especially regarding the Muslim women in media. I'd like to mention a few. One is the challenges facing Arab and Muslim women in media, or Muslim media in America. The Media and Muslims, that was done at the ISNA conference in 2002 in Chicago. Counterfeit Images, the Media and Perception, Federation of Muslim Women in Toronto, Canada. The Politics of Hijab at the University of Miami in 2004. The Image of Muslims in the West, the International Islamic University of Malaysia. Aziza Magazine and Muslim Women at Yale University. Publishing an international magazine in Atlanta, Breaking the Silence. How has your presentations, how have they been accepted, and has there been pushback? Where has the pushback come from?
Well, I think that, you know, it's changed. I mean, it's, you know, when we first began the magazine, people said were very weary. It was the very first of its kind. and people were wondering if this was going to be something to bash men. And we said, no, we love men. We just want to have a space where we can discuss our issues as women. And so there was lots of hesitancy about who we were, are, what we were going to be publishing. And so now that we've kind of established our reputation as a magazine that reflects who Muslim women in America are, we're not telling people that this is the way to be Muslim or this is the way to be Muslim, but rather this is what Muslim women in America are doing and thinking and experiencing. We've gained a certain level of acceptance in many different communities. And so now when I present, it's the pushback is different. First, people weren't used to seeing a multi-ethnic magazine. They wanted only to see their ethnicity. So they would open the magazine and say, where are all the Arabs, or where are all the Pakistanis, or where are the women without hijab, where are the women with hijab? It's interesting because people were only seeing what they wanted to see, but now they understand that we are reflecting everyone. It's different. When I speak to mixed audiences, people who are Muslim and not Muslim, or predominantly not in practicing Islam, then the pushback has to come with, you know, the treatment of women. The question might be something along the lines of, well, look what happens in such and such countries where Islam is the law. Why are women treated like that? So that is a lot of the explanation I have to do about, you know, the difference between cultural adulterations and the religion and so on.
So have you ever been to, am I saying it right, Tajikistan?
Tajikistan, yes. Yeah, I went to Tajikistan. Uh-huh.
Yes, you have an article here that's called The Good Women of GOM.
Yes.
Yeah. Can you tell us about that article?
Well, I visited Tajikistan for a couple of months, a couple of weeks, and while there I met several women and was, you know, people, whenever I travel, people say, well, can you do a magazine for our country? And I was like, no, we can't do a magazine for your country, but we can write about your country. Quite often, you know, people want an Aziza in Arabic or an Aziza in Malaysian or something, which would be, you know, an undertaking that's far beyond our capacity at this time. But we do have one article, one department in the magazine called Global Voices, where we look at a Muslim woman doing something in another part of the world. So Aziza is predominantly Muslim women in North America. And so So when I was there, I was just mesmerized, I think, with the women and their resilience and their strength and their life. We went up to, of course, the capital is Dushanbe, and it's quite modern. But then when we went up to the Pamir Mountains, up in the mountains, it's much more remote up in Khuruj. And, you know, people are living in very basic situations. And so we wanted to do that. And so another a teacher from California actually was doing a stint there teaching girls English, and the girls decided that they wanted to write an article. So this article is actually written by four teenage girls who wrote about the women in their community, the women who were they were impressed with.
You know, I did an interview with Naima from Infinite Productions down in Baltimore. And one of the questions that I'd asked her had to do with the involvement of the Muslim sisters in the Baltimore area, how she found it, and especially during Women's History Month. And she said that there was a lot of activity of women, and she started to name some of the women that was actually doing things. And a lot of times we don't hear about that. And that's what I found about this magazine and this story, that even in Tajikistan, there is a lot of activity, and that women do make a great contribution to their societies and what they're doing.
Yes, I remember when I first began the magazine, I think we were two or three issues had come out, and somebody said, well, this is a great magazine, but aren't you afraid you're going to run out of stories?
Wow.
So her idea was that there weren't enough Muslim women doing great things to write about. But quite the opposite, we have found that there's such an explosion of Muslim women doing fantastic things, it's hard for us, you know, to cut down. We need to make the magazine bigger so that we can share more stories. But there's so many great, you know, stories. It's really wonderful. It's really wonderful. I feel so blessed to be able to share the stories of Muslim women.
There is another part in the contents section on money matters, and this month is talking about the Balancing Act of everything you need to know about budgets. And in this day and time, in the American circumstance, budgeting is very, very important. Have you found that budgeting is the same in some of the other countries that you have visited?
Definitely not. I think that, and let me just say that the Money Matters department is something that we just added for the beginning of Volume 7. This is a new department, and the sister who's writing it is an accountant and has, you know, a few different organizations and businesses. So, and budgeting, sometimes I think, you know, different people manage their money differently.
Is the sister who's writing this, is she here in the USA and she's writing from that perspective?
Yes, she's in the U.S. Yes.
Okay.
She's
as you were saying.
And I think that, you know, different people approach money differently. And, you know, oftentimes in some societies, money is kind of the central, you know, central factor. And people relate to each other depending on how much money they have or how much money they don't have. In other societies, it's not that. There's not this alliance to money or to things or to the material. It's more their lives are more centered around family or centered around you know, relationships. So it's different in different places. It's definitely different.
You know, that's hard to comprehend from coming from my American perspective.
Right. American perspective, you know, the dollar and the pursuit of material wealth is tantamount. It's very central to people's life. It's like you get educated so you can get a good job. You get a good job so you can get money, and your life is kind of wrapped up around getting that money. And in other places, even in Europe, you take time to live. It's not about the pursuit of money. And especially in warm places where food is abundant, you go out in your backyard and you have fruits and vegetables growing. And so food is always there. You recognize the abundance of the earth, and there's not this frantic, hectic pursuit of material and money.
Have you had an opportunity to, are there any panels that you have been on that have looked at the organization of the family or decline of the family that surrounds this topic, especially as far as money is concerned?
Not so much money. Definitely we've talked about the family and the importance of parenting. And actually I'm going to be doing something next week at Atlanta Masjid here about parenting. You know, there are many, many panels I've been on talking about the family and the importance of the family being kind of the base for the community. And but money, not so much. I've talked about it in terms of community economics, supporting Muslim businesses and supporting the development of the community and the evolution of the community through the support of businesses. Certainly we've done that. We did a thing called the Month of Muslims, where you only spend your money with Muslims for a whole month for everything, you know, your laundry detergent, your clothing, your food, everything you have to buy from a Muslim. So there was an experiment that we did that with that, to trying to see, was it difficult? Was it easy? Were the products good quality? What challenges did you have? So we wrote about that too.
You know, that brings us to another important section that is part of your magazine, which I found very impressive. As I was saying, image is very, very important. In particular, I think that many times we don't see the right images. And in Aziza magazine, you present some very beautiful images of Muslim women in fashion, like Sanrik style. And there was this splash gear that had to do with full-cover bathing suits.
Yes, yes, uh-huh. She's one of our advertisers and one of our business partners. She actually, Splash Gear, is based in California, and she was the one that sponsored the photo contest. And, yeah, she makes sportswear and bathing suits for Muslim women who swim and snorkel, as I do. When I go on vacation, I go snorkeling, so...
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, so the fashions all in the magazine are again Muslim women fashions. We try to feature Muslim women designers, Muslim women fashion shows. So this is a place where we promote the designers and everything who are designing specifically for Muslim women.
I wanted to make a mention about this. This is the Spiritual Legacy poster. How long have you had that? This original Aziza poster lists 13 things to hand down to our daughters and sons, a beautiful addition to any home, school, national library. What can you tell us about this poster that you had? How long have you been sponsoring it?
That is an article that I wrote in one of the magazines. I think that was in the sixth volume. And we had such a positive response from the article that we decided to make it into a poster so people can put it up, so that people are putting up in their masjid or their school or their I know one woman, she put it up in her nursery. She had a newborn, and she put it up as a reminder to herself. But yeah, there, you know, many people are putting it up and talking about basically the things that we should hand to our children. Oftentimes, just going back to the material again, when we think about leaving something for our children, we think, oh, we'll leave them the house, we'll leave them, you know, the life insurance policy, we'll leave them money and jewelry. But actually, what we should also be leaving them is a spiritual legacy where they have understanding of themselves as spiritual beings and their connection to the Creator.
Yes, it's a very beautiful poster. I'm sure that I will be ordering one because I could see it being in my house. Also, there's a section called Ayat. Do you always feature an ayat in the magazine? And also,
we always. That's the last page of the magazine, and it's illustrated by a Muslim woman artist. And it's some ayat from the Quran about, you know, whatever we see there. And it's a department that's always in. It's the last page. And so
Is it always the same sister that does the artwork?
Oh, no. Different artwork and different art, completely different artwork, completely different styles. So
that was another question about some of the artwork and the illustrations that you have, the creative abstract illustrations that you have. Are those submitted, or do you have a group of artists that actually are working for the magazine? How does that go?
We do have some artists who you know, we commission, but many are submitted as well. Or sometimes artists write to us and say, you know, I have this artwork, can you use this in the magazine? And we'll pay them to, you know, it's just a token fee to a token payment for the rights to use it in the magazine. But we always look for freelance writers and artists and photographers as well. And all the articles are done by Muslim women, written by Muslim women. The artwork mostly by Muslim women, but sometimes we use artwork or photography that by men too. Sometimes we do, but the articles definitely are all Muslim women.
Now I'm going to move to another section that is part of the magazine. It's Lifestyle. And in the Lifestyle, you have some subjects of decor, style, menu, destinations, and well-being. Are these the basic subtitles in the Lifestyle section of the
Right, menu? Right. So that's the menu is the food and the recipes, and sometimes we feature books by Muslim women, recipe books or cookbooks. Sometimes we feature Muslim restaurants or a Muslim woman chef, or sometimes we just get recipes that, we feature one particular, like maybe sandwiches or salads or one particular, item of food. And in the decor, again, something, how we decorate.
Before you go there, what I would like to do is read from Decor, actually. Because the article in this magazine this month is The Heart of the House. It says, when I was growing up, the kitchen was the center of our home. It was the place we all ate our meals, completed our homework, debated current events, and beat each other at Monopoly. It was where we watched Mom bake cinnamon buns, stir stew, and canned tomatoes, where we begged her for just one more piece of warm fudge as its aroma enticed us from the cooling place on the tiled counter. Boy, that sounds, when I read that, I mean, it really took me back, and especially in this in this time of McDonald's and Burger King and iPhones and Facebook, the Real Housewives of New York, New Jersey, take your pick. But, I mean, the kitchen is the place where, I mean, I think that this article is going to give the idea, if it's not already the idea, but it just made me, go back to that's what the heart of the house is.
Yeah, the kitchen, because that's the food. The food is a sustenance, and it was, a time when, we sat down for dinner with everybody sat down, and, Mom was making the dinner or Dad was making the tea or whatever, and it was a place of coming together at the, around the table.
Now,
so last time, I think, the issue before that, I think we did we featured in that decor section, we featured a Muslim woman designer, and her name now, Fawda Salim. And we just, we featured some rooms that she had designed and she had decorated. And so we, do different rooms and different decorators in that.
Yeah, very beautiful pictures. You also have a part that's called style, and it says, and this here is the Sanrique style, and it says, fashion fades, but style is eternal. That's a very classy statement, number one. But there was something else, I had it written down on a piece, but I'm going to find it real quick. And it had to do with hair. I found that piece there it is right there. There it is right there. I've got to tell listeners, you've got to hear this. This is Grow Healthy. Grow Healthy is the name of the company, and they have a line called Nothing But. But it says here, here's to those who love the ups and downs, twists and turns, the good and getting their journey. Of nothing but their very own hair. It's so beautiful.
That's an advertisement. Is that an advertisement?
That's an advertisement.
Yeah, that's one of our ads, our advertisers. Yeah. Yeah, and the source of revenue for the magazine is from advertisers and from subscribers. So that's how we fund, that's how the magazine runs. So if anybody's interested in advertising to Muslim women, if anybody has a product that's of value to Muslim women, then they can advertise in Aziza.
Yes, very nicely put. I was also impressed to find out in the style section. This is also in lifestyle, but there's a section that's called style. And it said, 2012 saw an explosion of style and color in the American Muslim fashion industry. There's an American Muslim fashion industry, Sister Taiba?
Yes, there is. And we have lots of up-and-coming and some who are more established designers. We've had designers Muslim women designers for over 35 years in this country. And so last year, a few of them, and the year before, a few of them made it to New York Fashion Week. and showed their fashions there. But before that, we've had Muslim women fashion shows. Well, the one in here in Atlanta is, what, 25, 26 years old? And it's all Muslim women, and all the designers are Muslim women, and that's, you know, this is, people don't think that we we can rock the fashions, but we certainly do.
Well, listen, I'm telling you, when I'm looking at these pictures here in this magazine are definitely rocking the fashion, that's for sure. And also, they're, again, just by having this magazine in your house, I mean, I think that it's just inspirational just to, you know, for a Muslim woman to open it up and see it. And it's also a confirmation for a Muslim man also.
Well, actually, we had one Muslim man who came to our booth at a convention and said that I'm buying this for my son because the Aziza woman is the kind of woman I want him to marry.
There you go.
So he said this is what that was his intention. He's buying that so he can become familiar with this type of Muslim woman, the Muslim woman who is empowered and who is one who is contributing to her community and to the world.
Alhamdulillah. But Sister Aziza, I'm Sister Taiba.
It's okay. Lots of people call me Sister Aziza.
I think that you're doing a great job as far as the magazine. Sister Taiba, I think what we should do is definitely encourage people to support Aziza Magazine, and that would be by going to azizamagazine.com. I thank you so very much for coming on and speaking with us. Your magazine is very important in the Muslim circumstance and also in the American community circumstances, especially as far as African-American people, and as far as our Muslim Americans is concerned, your magazine and the efforts that you are making as far as Aziza Magazine is very important. It's very successful. That's what we see as far as Aziza Magazine is concerned. And so we would definitely like to encourage people to subscribe to Aziza Magazine. It's a very modest price of $30, and that's for a year. Is that correct?
That's 4 years.
For a year, that's right. For the $30, to support Muslim media, support Aziza Magazine, that's very important, and we encourage people to do so. And Sister Aziza, we thank you so very much for taking the time to be with us on Meet the Mama Members, and we pray that Allah will continue to bless you in your efforts. Yes, we've been talking with Sister Taiba Taylor of Aziza Magazine, and with that, I look forward to being with you next week. I remain William Kareem. Assalamu alaikum.
Thank you for listening to this week's edition of Meet the Members of the Muslim American Media Alliance. Stay tuned and up to date on the activities of our members in media by visiting us on Facebook under Muslim American Media Alliance. And until next week's edition, when we publish the perspective of another Muslim in media, this is your host, William Kareem, signing off.